Hello, folks. This is Jamie Williams here with ThinkMcFlyThink.com for another edition of Movie Moan. Phil, say hello, sir.
Hello, everybody.
Joining us again this week is our pal from last week, Mr. Ed Hawken. Say hello, Ed.
Hello there. Once again, as always, a guest on this fine show here.
Well, thank you for coming.
Back by popular demand.
Exactly. We got so people. Yeah, exactly. So many people were banging down their door to get you back. How was your guys' week? What'd you guys do? See anything good?
I finally saw Wall-E.
Oh, yeah. Let's get some. Let's see. Let's get Caroline first. What'd you think, Phil?
I saw it yesterday it's called Real D, which is to say you go into a regular movie theater, not an IMAX theater, and you get these disposable 3D glasses, which apparently don't cost very much because they let you keep them, and I've still got mine. I'm going to be a responsible, eco-friendly movie patron. I'm going to keep these glasses, and next time I go to a 3D movie, I'm going to bring these instead of them giving me, you know, another ones, and I'm going to do my bit for the environment, you know, when I finally get to see Up in October.
Or Avatar.
About that right now.
You know what he could do with those 3D glasses also? Is he can go as that henchman from Back to the Future.
Yes, he can, his name is incidentally 3D. And yet he didn't show up in Back to the Future 3. That was the weirdest thing. It's like we saw them in the alternate.
Well, I don't think they had that technology back in 1885. So he would have had one of those giant apparatuses on his face.
Which would have been fine, but what I mean is like in Back to the Future 2, like all three of those actors are back in the alternate 1985, and then they're also in the 1955 when they go back to into the first movie, and yet when they go back in the third film, there's what's his name? Who's the actor who plays Biff Tannen in those flicks? I don't remember. I feel horrible that I don't remember his name offhand. But anyway,
it's off the top of my
Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson.
I can't freaking remember. That's it.
Tom Wilson plays Buford Cannon, his ancestor, and yet there's no, like, there isn't, like, a group of thugs who represent, like, those three actors. You think there would have been, and one of them was Billy Zane, interestingly enough, and you know what a household name is he is now. So, I mean, it's just kind of weird. Like, think he would have, you know, they would have done that, but apparently, like, they just didn't care by the third film. Some people would argue that they really stopped caring by the end of the second one. I would disagree. I liked three quite a bit, but that's just me. But back to Caroline.
Right.
Yeah, hello? Do you butt heads want to know about Caroline, or don't you?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, this website is called Think McFly Think, so as many Back to the Future references we can make, we have to. It's like it's legally required by the Zemeckis estate.
This is heavy, Phil. Exactly. This is heavy.
That or, you know, I'm still waiting to use my Doc Brown to catch a predator joke. You know, I'm saving it for the – for when it comes.
Anyway, Phil.
Yeah, exactly.
I forget where. Oh, yes. So anyway, regarding the film itself, I'm not going to review it because it's well after the fact and nobody cares, really. All I'll say is that I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though I was in an early afternoon showing, so I was surrounded by little girls who had never seen 3D before in their lives, judging by their reactions. They just went completely mad for it. I think it's a great movie. I don't think it's a masterpiece. Some critics really have been falling over themselves in adoration for it. I liked it a lot. I didn't love it. To be honest, I mean, I'm not a crazy fan of The Nightmare Before Christmas in the way a lot of people are. That movie didn't do much for me, but I enjoyed this movie. But one thing I did notice watching this movie, my first real D movie where I'm watching on a regular screen with these glasses, I noticed something. We're now at a point where we're supposedly getting a new 3D movie every month or so, and there's obviously a lot in production right now, so even if this is just a fad that is going to eventually die off, fact is, it's not going to die off for at least a year or two because of all these 3D movies that are in the pipeline. And one thing I noticed is when the shots and the actions of the characters are moving slowly or moving at normal speed, then the 3D works fine. It works wonderfully well. However, when something, a camera movement, an action by the character is moving very, very quickly or sporadically, all of a sudden the 3D doesn't work. Instead, what you get is this blurry effect. And obviously, it's nothing to do with the technology. It's simply due to the fact that your eyes, you know, don't have enough time to focus on the image. And so you get this blurry effect. And Coraline, there's a lot of sequences with birds and butterflies and weird winged creatures that fly up at the screen and waves arming around and crazy things. And because they're moving so quickly, it's just this blurry effect which takes you out of the movie. Mm. And it occurred to me watching this, obviously, most of the movies that we're going to see in 3D are going to be, you know, action movies, adventure movies, exciting things where a lot of fast things are going to happen. And I'm wondering, you know, if in Avatar, for example, there's a lot of fast-paced action sequences, is the 3D going to work at all? Or is it just going to be this 10-minute blur effect and I'm going to rip the damn glasses off my face and just going to want to beg to see it in 2D because, you know, 3D doesn't work for fast-paced images. Suddenly noticed last night a big flaw in the technology, and it concerns me, quite frankly.
I just don't care for 3D. I mean, it's just not my thing. I mean, I do think it's a fad that will go away. I think, you know, I think it was Chud's Devinferachu who said the reason why it's getting pushed so hard is because they can charge you more money for it. And it's like, yeah, that's true. That actually is a very good point. Yeah. I completely agree with that. Has there been a 3D movie so far that's actually succeeded, that's actually made money? And it was, the only one I can think of is, ironically enough, Spy Kids 3. I mean, like, the whole gimmick was it's in 3D, check it out. And it made a lot of money, made $100 million domestically. That's the only one that comes to mind that was a 3D movie specifically made for 3D and that actually made money. Can you guys think of one? Because I can't.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think I have one. I mean, it was
Eventually.
Go ahead.
Wouldn't Monsters vs. Aliens fit into this category?
Yeah.
That was a 3D movie.
That was a 3D movie, but like they had – it was mostly on regular screens though, I mean, as I recall. I could be wrong. I mean, like, it was one of those things kind of like, you know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe. I don't think that – does that count really? Huh. I don't know. Fuck.
I don't know because, I mean, what can you say about an exclusively 3D movie? It's all going to be – It's going to be a regular movie with occasional things jumping out.
Right, the hand.
But, I'm with you on this.
The hand.
You know, I don't get the attraction on 3D myself.
I mean,
it's very much a gimmick. You know, I don't see it appealing at all.
Yeah, let's be honest here. I mean, if there's any movie that needs to be 3D, it's porn. I mean, you know, let's do it. Let's keep it to the porn theaters, and then, you know, let's keep it at that. That's what I say.
Oh, I don't know if that's such a good idea, and porn theaters don't exist anymore.
They
don't think I'd want to see a cock coming at me on a giant screen. That'd be horrifying.
That's true, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, exactly. Milk in 3D. Yeah.
My dinner with Andre in high def.
Exactly. No, what I meant was like, you know, they have different kind of porns to fit, you know, every walk of life, if you will. This would be like, you know, obviously straight porn, just straight up like, you know, man and woman porn, you know. Like, that's the one I would want.
Well, like I'm saying, the body movements would have to be very slow for the 3D to work, because when they're moving very quickly, the 3D doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Although there's plenty of other movies that probably... there would be a lot of great movies in 3D, though. We just mentioned Milk. I mean, what other movies could you guys imagine in 3D and shit? You know, My Dinner with Andre was just mentioned. I mean, what else?
Gooby.
Gooby in 3D. Terrorizing children in 3D. It's...
Gooby
the
and
ultimate
Blue
experience.
3D Eugene Levy,
wow.
You know? Man,
those eyebrows will take up half.
This movie we were talking about last week.
What's that, Phil?
The American Gladiators movie we were talking about last week. That would be awesome in 3D.
That would be awesome.
Admit it.
That would be.
Oh, good.
You know, I mean, just... I don't know, I just don't care for the 3D thing. I mean, they've been pushing 3D since the 1950s and nobody gives a shit. I don't know why all of a sudden now it seems to matter. I mean, yes, technology is getting more and more advanced and shit, but still, I mean, really? Like,
Could it be argued with 3D is that because that's the only thing the theaters have now, in terms of differentiation from, the home theater experience? In that, because the theater, you know, attendance has been going down.
Yes.
A lot of, you know, it's been noted many times that people, that are a lot of, you know, you and I and people like others like ourselves are getting tired of dealing with the nonsense that goes on in the theaters. And as much as the theater experience is a very unique thing, it's almost to the point if you have the equipment and the technology, you could pretty much almost replicate that in your own home.
Yeah.
And it's, pretty much why the theaters are doing this is because, you know, they have to do something to separate themselves from the DVD home theater market. Otherwise, there's no reason really to go.
Yeah, but isn't home video sales going down too, though? I mean, isn't – like this last year, theater attendance has been up, actually.
Oh. Well, I mean, DVDs have definitely dropped off. They have not had the growth rate like they had, you know, when they first came out, and they've definitely it's slowed down quite a bit. I think that's also because you also have the streaming coming in, that technology, which is getting better, you know, which is what I feel will be, you know, how things, you know, how you will receive your entertainment, which is why I never subscribed to Blu-ray because, well, I don't have a high-def TV. More so, I'm not going to replicate, you know, upgrade my DVD selection just so I can have more discs, more stuff, when more than likely I can just stream it off.
I agree. So, you know, same way, same here. So...
But I think as far as blockbusters go, nothing ever changes. Fact is, people go out of a weekend. There's nothing they like better as a form of entertainment than seeing a big, expensive movie with a crowd.
Yeah.
I don't think that ever changes, and I don't think it ever will change.
That's true.
Don't think they have anything to
talk about. We've seen it a couple times this summer.
You know, they have some good films.
We just saw the summer with Star Trek. I mean, summer hasn't even. I mean, we're now in the Memorial Day weekend, and you know, I would argue that we did that with Terminator Salvation, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. Not so much, obviously, but yeah, I mean, and Up next weekend for Ed and I. Sorry, Phil. You know, I can't – every show we have to mention that the fact that Phil's not going to get Up till October. And so every
– What about The Hangover? Will he get that before October or will he also get that
good
in
Good question. Phil, will you get that? When are you getting that?
I'll probably get a Hangover before October, but I'm not – I'll have to check on
that.
No, The Hangover.
Anyway. Yeah, it was a poor tip of humor. Anyway.
Anyway, look, I like Coraline. Terminator Salvation, Jamie.
No.
You saw it. Tell us.
No, no. Before we even get to that, Ed saw WALL-E, and you have not seen that yet. So you've seen it now.
Oh,
what'd
sorry.
No, it's no problem. Go ahead. What'd you think of WALL-E, Ed?
It was fantastic. I just finally got around to seeing it last week. I know many are probably wondering what the hell was I doing for the past
That's
year,
what I was
but
thinking.
I just finally got around to watching it now. It was quite lovely. The designs were great. I love the very subtle way you could see the inner workings of Eve, if the light is right, and obviously all of WALL-E's little activities. I think my personal favorite was when he was trying to figure out where to put the spork, and he's looking at cup of spoons and the cup of forks, and he then just places it in the middle. I mean, those moments where he's just, you know, doing his business are probably the best moments of the film. And then I also laughed when all the people in the ship cheered when the captain took his first step.
Yes.
So it was a very lovely, you know, movie that kept going, and you know, and it was fine. You know, it was very good. You know, entertaining.
Now,
another time when Pixar hits it out of the park.
So where would you rank this amongst the other Pixar films? See, I think it's the best one. I think that's.
I haven't seen all of the other.
I think it's the best Pixar film. There's no doubt in my mind. It's the best one.
And I think it's the second
I would definitely
best.
Say it's up there.
And
I mean. Toy Story 2 was fantastic.
Yes, it was.
And but I admit I have not seen Monsters Inc. and I haven't seen Ratatouille.
Ooh, you haven't seen Ratatouille.
I have to get around to seeing.
Oh, see Ratatouille.
Yeah.
Once again.
I'm sure you'll get around to it one day.
It's a timing thing. I would put WALL-E probably if I had to rank it in the top three, but then Incredibles would be right up there also. I think the one I didn't like I liked the least probably would have been Cars and. Maybe A Bug's Life, but I mean, none of those are terrible. Although I always loved how people, when they watched Cars, said they ripped the plot completely off of Doc Hollywood. So that always
they
made
said
me,
that. Oh my god!
You never heard about that?
No, that's funny. That
no,
that's hysterical. Actually,
yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's similar, but it's like really. Huh. I didn't think about that. But the other question I have is that now, were you not moved by the love story? Because I was blubbering like a baby at the end of the movie. You know, once he gets his memory back, I was. You know, people ask me, "You all right?" Like,
I didn't get emotional about that. I did enjoy the part when they're flying through, you know, in space, and they're in, you know, they're on the outside of the ship, and they're moving about that. You know, delicate ballet, as it were, and that was very nice, and that was very beautiful. I know that movie got a little bit of infamy on Chud,
yes.
But that's another story for another time, just because of some comments Devin made, which
are very funny.
You know, maybe not, are probably not worth touching.
I think they're very funny. I don't agree with them, but I laughed, needless to say.
Oh no,
it was.
I honestly think that was.
Go ahead,
mm-hmm.
Phil.
I was going to ask because this is a question that you, Jamie, posed to me. And I post to John Campio of the movie blog, and no one's been able to give me a good explanation for it. Jamie hit it on the head, and it's been puzzling me ever since. How do the humans on the Axiom, who don't seem to have opposable joints and can't get up off the floating chairs, how do they procreate? Where do these babies come from?
Machinery and artificial insemination.
Probably.
It's frightening.
If the machines
though,
are doing everything,
really,
it's clear
really
the machines are able to make procreation.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they sit there and they just let them, they're just like, go. And that's it. That's obviously what happened.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll be in the European version that we'll get to see eventually, but, you know, still.
The unrated.
If I could have been a fly on the wall at any at any story meeting at Pixar in their entire company history, it would be that one where one of the guy says to Andrew Stanton, "So where did the babies come from?"
And you know,
well, we're not going to say this.
Yeah, but you know, someone did ask that though. There's just no doubt in my mind. Someone asked that at least once. There probably was that one idiot dude who was always asking in every meeting, kind of like a comedy writer who's always wanting to pitch the same joke, and they keep saying like, "We're not going to hear that goddamn joke this time, Gary." And there's always that one dude who kept like pushing, like, "So how do they get the babies? We've already heard that question." Okay, bad joke. Anyway, so I saw Terminator Salvation this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I saw Terminator Salvation Thursday night, and I liked it. I mean, it wasn't the greatest movie ever, but, I mean, it certainly doesn't, you know, warrant the critical raping that it's been getting from the critics. It appears to be getting. It's kind of a mixed to negative kind of vibe coming from it. The word of mouth hasn't been good either. It certainly hasn't been doing that awesome at the box office because, and I'm looking at the numbers right now, Night at the Museum 2 has kicked its ass. Pretty badly, as a matter of fact, even though Terminator came out a day in advance, they had a 5-day weekend, Night at the Museum will still make more. Its current projections, including tomorrow, it will have hit $70 million for its 4-day Memorial Day weekend. On the other hand, Terminator will have made, in its 5-day weekend, including tomorrow's Memorial Day, $62 million. So I think we can stick a fork in this franchise, gentlemen. I think it's done. I think it's safe to assume that we will not be seeing Terminator 5, The Voyage Home now, as McGee's been talking. Where, you know, like John...
Final Frontier, actually.
Well, no, I say that joke because McGee was saying that there was going to be the fifth one would involve John Connor going back in time with some other members of the Resistance, and they help the people of the modern-day world help them get ready for Judgment Day. That would have been the fifth one. So,
God.
So a friend of mine did a mock-up of the Star Trek IV poster, except he put Christian Bale and Sam Worthington on the cover and said Terminator The Voyage Home. So that's what I call the fifth.
And ironically, the guy who plays Chekhov is in this movie.
Yes, and he's good in both of them. So, I actually liked him more in this movie than I did in Star Trek, and I liked him a lot in Star Trek. And that's just because he didn't, you know, it's like, you know, he had to do a Russian accent in Star Trek. It was a little bit jarring, at least when you first hear it. In Terminator, you hear he does a Michael Biehn impersonation at first, and it kind of is a little jarring, but you get used to that a little bit quicker. He's like, "My name is Kyle Reese." And granted, I can't do a Michael Biehn impression either, but he clearly did it was good enough to impress McGee, apparently, since he got the job. But, as a summer movie, I was entertained for my 2 hours. But, yeah, there's some pretty stupid shit in this movie. Chief among them is the now infamous Arnold Schwarzenegger cameo. So the studio decides that, hey, you know, we're going to spend tens of millions of dollars to get Arnold Schwarzenegger's likeness, because you have to pay him for that. And then we're going to digitally scan his face, and we're going to hire this dude named Roland Kickinger, who's a lookalike, who actually kind of looks just like him, and his entire career in Hollywood is basically to play Arnold-type characters. And he's friends with Arnold, so it's kind of, you know, I'm sure they asked Arnold, who would you hire, and he suggested him. And then, of course, the expensive CGI to make the guy look just like Arnold, which he does, to be fair. And I pretty much laughed out loud when he showed up during the screening. I mean, I was the only person who reacted to that. No one else made a sound during the entire movie. I'm not joking.
That's not.
Yeah, I was the only one who was making any kind of noise, and it was laughing at the movie in that moment. Just so stupid. Like it, and it's barely a minute, and it's near the third act. And you just wasted millions of dollars for no reason whatsoever, just to put them in the movie, and no one cares. Like, that's.
Well, wait. I had heard that his that they didn't pay him really. That they had a cast from I think T2 or something, and they just threw it in essentially. It was already material that had already existed. It wasn't that they brought him out of the governor's office to scan him and start from scratch. That it was something that was already.
Oh,
there,
really?
And they just threw it in as like a joke. Yeah, that's what
I did not know that. But I will say, I mean, he did show up on the set. He did have to get paid for that, though. They did have to pay Arnold agreement for his likeness and shit. I did hear that. So, you know, either way, you're spending all this money for a bunch of nothing. And it doesn't even matter. You could have put any other person on there to have John Connor fight during that little sequence. But, boy, that's, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, now the
– So how many shots – there's been some debate about this. How many shots is Arnold in exactly?
Not many. His entire scene is barely a minute. Like, John Connor is looking for – they're letting the humans out. Like, they're in this sort of – I guess you could call it, for lack of a better term, a concentration camp for humans so they can, you know, like, tear their skin off and put it on Terminators basically. And Kyle Reese is in there with Newt. And I say Newt because there's a little girl who's mute, who doesn't say anything, runs around with a teddy bear. So you can't help but call her.
Oh, you've got to be fucking kidding
no,
me.
No, I'm not joking. And her name is Star. You know, so that's, you know, because they, I guess they thought, like, we have to put a kid in there so it can appeal to the kid audience. I'm not joking when I say this, sir. So it's Kyle Reese and this kid. And so, you know, John Connor and, what's the name? Sam Worthington, played by,
Marcus,
thank you. So they're going to rescue them, and John Connor is screaming out for all these people who are running away, you know, Kyle Reese! Kyle Reese! And then, like, he opens the door thinking Kyle Reese is in there, and all of a sudden, steam comes out, and we see this shadowy figure, and we hear the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and there's Arnold, and I'm the only person reacting to it. And I'm laughing at it, nonetheless, and it's very stupid. And I was expecting him to say something, so he's getting into this little fight with Arnold, and needless to say, he doesn't. I was under the impression Arnold was going to say something in this movie. That, at least he. I mean, you know, maybe he could have said, like, you know, I don't know, talk to the hand or something. I don't know. That would have been nice. But he didn't say anything. He just looks menacingly and kicks John Connor's ass until he's rescued. I think it's Kyle Reese who ends up blowing the Terminator away. So pointless scene. You know, just, you know, I'm glad Arnold got paid, you know, a bunch of money. You know, he got money for nothing. And apparently so did Christian Bale, because there won't be a Terminator 5, so he doesn't have to feel embarrassed by this franchise anymore.
What about Linda Hamilton? Is she in it?
Oh, that's the other interesting thing. I'm glad you brought that up. Now, I could have sworn, wasn't Linda Hamilton paid to do an opening narration for the movie? Was that? Am I correct with those reports?
That was the story.
There's no opening narration in this movie. He listens to an old cassette tape of of her readings. And it appears to be new dialogue that we haven't heard before, and that's Linda Hamilton. And it's okay, but again, I was under the impression she was supposed to do an opening narration at the beginning of the movie, and that's not in there whatsoever. I could have sworn I heard that. So, excuse me. So, again,
That's not necessarily a bad thing, because it would kind of feel like a ripoff of T2.
Well, there's also, like, see, everyone has to give, like, their little lines and stuff, and that didn't bother me, but... You know, it's funny because McGee was going around saying this was a reboot. It's like, it's a reboot of the franchise. It's just like Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. And it's like, dude, do not compare your movie to other more popular movies. You're comparing this to a bunch of nerds who are going to bitch about the slightest change to canon. And you're going out there adding fuel to the fire. You're basically bringing on the criticism to yourself if you don't deliver the goods. And in this case, he deserves the criticisms, in my opinion. I mean, I thought he'd... Like I said, I was entertained. It was on caliber with Terminator 3 in that it was a competently made and entertaining film with some decent performances all around. But as a Terminator movie, it really just it lets itself down. You know, it brings the I don't want to say it brings the franchise down a notch, because that's unfair to say, and that's not really true. But you know. It's a movie that I would say I wouldn't tell my friends to go rush out and see it in theaters. I would say if you're going to go see it in theaters, check out a matinee where you can pay, you know, you don't have to pay as much, or better yet, just rent the DVD or Blu-ray. You know, unlike Star Trek, where I told my friends, you must go see this now. You must go see this with a packed audience. Mm-hmm. You know, and the other thing is, like, Christian Bale, you know, it was supposed to be a big deal to get this guy on board. Like, this is a major coup. This means something. This is going to bring in so many people now that Batman is John Connor. And yet, even though he's fine in the role of John Connor, I, honest to God, you could have cast any other a number of other actors as John Connor, and the movie would have been exactly the same. And it's just like, Bale just doesn't give a shit in this movie. He's not bad, he's fine, but he just doesn't give a shit. Usually he's this crazy, and he's committed to his part and shit, and here he's just like, whatever. His whole character arc in the whole movie is, for all three acts, I must find Kyle Reese, because if he dies, I will cease to exist. Which is kind of bullshit anyway, because we're not talking about Back to the Future here. I mean, the time travel logic doesn't make any sense. It should have – it's kind of – you know, just by logic, it should have been like Star Trek where, you know, it's like, okay, this timeline's been altered so many times, we don't know what the future's going to be. But, we, you know, instead mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, they're assuming that, well, if Kyle Reese gets killed, then I'm going to disappear out of nowhere, which is not the case. But that made no sense either. But, I mean, honestly, you could have put – I thought of a number of actors who could have been John Connor and would have been fine and would have been no better or worse than Christian Bale, but it wouldn't have affected the movie one way or another. And one of them was Sam Worthington, because I was thinking, like, he could have been John Connor and it would have been the same movie. You could have made Ed Norton.
It's funny.
Ed Norton.
It's funny you mention that, because the word had been that Bale was originally supposed to be for Marcus, but he wanted to be John Connor, so they switched it and they had to rewrite the whole thing on the fly.
Right.
Because he wanted to be Connor. He did not want to be Marcus.
And he would have probably been a better Marcus.
And I had heard
– he probably would have been a better Marcus.
Perhaps. I don't know.
You know, I mean, just like fucking – you know, Brandon Routh could have been John Connor, and he would have been just the same. And that's no strike against Routh, but it's like this is how much this character – you know, it's just like, wow, this – I can name other actors. Guy Pearce could have been John Connor in this movie. He would have
– Well, anybody could have been John Connor.
I would have liked to
see
you be John. I would have liked to see you be a James.
No, I would have been yelling at the director of photography also. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Actually, I probably wouldn't have, because I would have been so overjoyed to be in a movie. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, just it's enjoyable. I liked it, but I don't think it's worthy of the critical ass raping it's been getting. I mean, it's certainly better than Wolverine. I mean, like, I felt the same way about Wolverine, but that was a mediocre movie that I was like, meh. I like this movie. I was entertained. You know? But, I mean, come on. Really? Like, the Harry Knowles review where he basically raped it himself. I'm like, dude, that so is not worthy of your, like, raping it. Particularly considering the movies that this guy gives great reviews to. No offense to Harry Knowles, who I do like, but still. Come on.
Right. No, because Knowles will tend to like everything.
Exactly. He liked Van Helsing, for God's sake.
Well, I have a couple of questions for you, Jamie, about the movie, but I mean, you first, Ed. Do you have any questions?
Not really. I imagine seeing the giant robots that ran on diesel must have been quite a sight, though. That must have been something I have to figure. I mean, how was the CGI in the machines themselves?
The CGI was noticeable. It was.
Oh, really?
I didn't think the CGI was that good. I mean, it was. There's particularly some stuff in the third act where John Connor, they're in the factory deep into it, and all these various Terminators are going after him, and he pours like a molten lava over it, and it's pretty bad CGI, I must say. You know. Hmm. Yeah. So.
Oh, my turn, is it? Right.
Yes.
So as Arnold would say in Kindergarten Cop, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want them answered immediately. So my first question, Jamie, is you and I have been wondering, what is with all the hype about Sam Worthington?
Yes.
He's been cast, he's in this, he's in Avatar, he's in Clash of the Titans. This is the first time we've actually seen the guy in action, so we can find out, you know, what the fuss is about. What's the fuss about? Is he any good?
He's fine. He's decent. But everyone in this movie is decent. No one's terrible in this movie. There isn't, like, one actor who sticks out in a good or bad way. But, I mean, I mean, he does have the best part. Him and Anton Yeltsin had the most to do, and that's running, you know, away from machines. He's okay. I'm still waiting to – the verdict is still out on this guy, though, in my opinion.
Fair enough. Next question. There's been this big mystery surrounding Helen Bonham Carter's character. So what's the deal with her?
I was just about to say.
She's in the very first scene in the movie, and then she's in the third act. Deep into the third act. That's it. She basically like writes like Marcus Wright is on death row for killing his brother and a bunch of cops, and that's one thing I did like. They didn't try to make him sympathetic to be like, well, I didn't mean to. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. His character's basically like, yeah, I killed my brother and I killed a bunch of cops and I'm a monster and I deserve to get killed. And it's like, I actually like that. That's kind of refreshing. They didn't try to make him sympathetic. He's a bastard. He admits he's a bastard. I like that. And yet this guy is one of your two leads. Again, I like that. So she comes in and basically has him sign his body over to donate his body to science, and it turns out to be for Skynet. And she's dying of cancer, so you know she's trying to appeal to him. And she's in the first scene in the movie, and then he signs, you know, he agrees to do it, and then she's in the third act where basically she's the villain, for lack of a better term, because like he's talking to the computers back at Skynet Central, and I guess it's supposed to be Los Angeles or San Francisco, and it's Helena Bonham Carter on the screen. But that's not to say that it's her character. It's just that they say, look, this is an image that you recognize, so we're playing this image in front of you. That's literally it.
Does she have the crazy hair?
No, she has no hair in this movie. She's dying of cancer, sir.
Bald as a cue ball.
Oh, sorry, of course.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of cancer do you think we were talking about, sir?
Well, I suppose that's crazy.
Was this like movie cancer?
No. The cancer gives you luscious hair.
Exactly.
Future cancer. Well,
this,
you know, it's a McGee movie. Anything's possible.
Yeah, is this like movie cancer where you die beautifully? It's like, no, dying is pretty ugly, you know. Unless it's like,
the best kind of cancer.
The best kind of cancer. Yeah, the kind that I don't get. That's the best kind of cancer.
Right.
Sure enough. Okay, well, here's another question about Christian Bale. From all of the reaction I'm hearing, and you know, of course, obviously the stuff that went down regarding his fight with the DP or whoever it was, I mean, it sounds like once this whole thing is over, it sounds like this is the biggest misstep he possibly could have made in his career. I mean, he was doing so well, people forgot he was in Reign of Fire and in Equilibrium and in a couple of shit movies because he'd done some great, great stuff. And now he's done this, and it seems like he's made a tragic mistake, and he might, you know, that might sully his reputation for a while. Is that,
no,
do you think that's true, James?
Absolutely not.
No.
Okay. He's fine in the movie.
It's worth asking.
Yes, it is. He's fine in the movie. Well, I mean, let's be fair. When you raise someone, whether it's an actor or a filmmaker or whoever, so high, the next thing it's going to do eventually is you're going to bring him down. And is this the film that's going to, quote, bring down Christian Bale? No, he's fine in the movie. He walks away just fine in this movie. He got paid a fortune for this film. That's the reason he did this movie. They paid him so much money. And granted, he did have to sign up for two more sequels, but by all accounts, he doesn't seem to be crazy about this movie, and he gets to walk away. It's a one-and-out deal, apparently. So he benefits. He got paid a fortune, one movie. And that's it. He doesn't have to worry about it anymore. I mean, so I have to give the advantage to him for this one. You know, let's see how right. Public Enemies does before we start shitting on Christian Bale's rep.
True,
because he's got that. And that movie, let's be fair, that movie is being sold more on Johnny Depp than on him. So,
Yeah.
Excuse me. So
I would.
Go ahead, Ed.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, thanks. I would say, I mean, for the record, I don't think anyone remembers Reign of Fire. Nope. And, I mean, Bale's been in others. I could say another movie where he was not real good in, which was Harsh Times, which no one saw. Nope. You know, no one – I don't think
he
it's going to be that
Shaft
big of a
as
deal.
Well.
Oh, yeah, he was Shaft.
He was in Shaft, actually.
He's the villain.
He's the bad guy in Shaft. I remember that. And, no, I mean, you know, there really won't be an issue with him. I mean, I think if it becomes like a string of flops,
right,
then you're going to lead the trouble. But, you know, no one's really saying anything that Bale's doing anything wrong. It's an overall, it's a giant meh of a movie, and no one's faulting the actors. You'll hear about when an actor screws it up bad versus the movie was just mediocre. So I don't think there's any real problem. As Jamie said, the guy walked away with a ton of money, and he's free to do his next thing.
Here's the thing, though. If anyone takes the hit for this movie, it's McGee. And,
right.
And the thing is, though, I've heard I've looked on some boards and everyone's just like, huh, McGee's over now. And it's like, one, fuck you. You never made a movie. You don't know how hard it is to make a movie. So go to hell. I mean, I can't stand people who say shit like that. I'm sorry. But the other thing is, you know, he's already working on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea for Disney. That starts shooting in a couple of – they're filming this fall in Australia apparently. He's doing okay. So it's not like his, you know, really like his career is over. I mean, the guy is going to continue to get work. However, this was supposed to be his movie to gain legitimacy, and it didn't work. So in that sense, yeah, I guess you could say it failed. It failed for him. But you know, it does fall on McGee, I guess, at the end of the day for this movie, because he was talking about
my
storm.
Only problem with the guy is he seems to be a pathological liar.
Yeah.
I mean, he says these things, and then other people come and say, I never said that.
Yeah. Everyone lies when they're making a movie, particularly when shit gets leaked, and for that I sympathize, because if the ending to my $200 million plus movie leaked on the internet, you goddamn know I would lie my ass off about it and say that was never the ending, and so would everyone else. So I sympathize with the man in that regard, but to go around saying that, yes, James Cameron blessed the script and personally recommended Worthington is – he brought that on himself. And then Cameron came out and said, I didn't say that. That's a lie. And then for him to say that Jonathan Nolan was the head writer of the movie and then the Writers Guild to come out and say, no, he's not. You know, he was on the set every day doing rewrites, but it was not radically new shit. It was not something that radically altered the script. I mean, basically what he did was he was writing new shit for Christian Bale, it sounds like. That's it. That wasn't enough to warrant him to get a credit. That's another lie. What else did he lie about in this movie? I mean, I know he exaggerated on some other shit. I mean, good God. Comparing it to Batman Begins and The Dark Knight in front of a bunch of fanboys was stupid. He brought that on himself. So, yeah, these wounds are self-inflicted for the most part. So I don't have sympathy for that in that regard.
The way you phrased that, getting his blessing, I suddenly had pictures of McGee visiting Cameron at the Vatican and him personally. But the way you said, got his blessing, is like, bless you, my child. I bless this script. Get me the lamp.
I imagine that Cameron would say, give me a nice amount of money and I will bless anything, you know. That's what I thought about Christian Bale's performance during Terminator. It was fine, but I couldn't help but think of the Dr. Nick quote on The Simpsons. The most rewarding part was when they paid me the money. That's what I thought of. That's what I thought of the whole time, because I'm sitting there going like, boy, this Christian Bale's a fucking genius, man. They convinced people that he was so important, they paid him so much money, and he doesn't fucking even try in this movie. He's just like, I must find Kyle Reese. And then he gets into another action sequence, and that's it. That's all he does for 2 hours. Props to him.
Well, it's terrible because, you know, if he doesn't work, then the movie doesn't work. It's like Aaron Eckhart in The Dark Knight. If you don't believe he's this kick-ass district attorney that is the light of Gotham City, then the movie doesn't work. It's the same here. If you don't believe this guy could lead and inspire the human race to fight the machines, then the movie doesn't work.
He does.
So if he's just thrown it in.
He works. I mean, like, I will say to his credit, there wasn't I didn't see the baggage of the Batman movies there. I believed he was John Connor, but it's just he didn't give a shit. We've seen so many other movies where Bale is so, like, fucking nuts committed to a role, and here he's just not. He's just like, it was clearly his easiest role ever because he had to do the least amount of shit in terms of character arc and dialogue. All he had to do was run, basically. That's all he had to do for 2 hours.
I think part of it is just because the character itself, John Connor, is not really defined.
No, he's not.
You know, I mean, it's story based. It's not so much character based. I mean, all I know about John Connor really is he's been played by like two kind of whiny people, and briefly as an adult in T2 in T2, when he's sending Arnold back in time. But and what else is there? Okay, the guy leads the resistance. There's not a whole lot there because it was never really defined, you know.
It was always better left to the imagination, the quote legend of John Connor. In the same way that it was always left better to the imagination, the Clone Wars and the Star Wars films and the war in the Terminator films. It was best to never actually see it because we could just play it in our minds what the hell that could – you know, our imaginations was unlimited and nothing – you know, to show that just was flawed logic in my opinion.
To be fair, I don't know if you ever saw the Terminator 2 ride at Universal Studios in 3D. In that movie, I mean, yeah, Arnold and Eddie Furlong, they actually go to the scanner, basically fights a giant liquid metal spider, and that was pretty fucking cool. I doubt anything in this movie will be that good. So that's all I want to say about that. My last question, Jamie, is... Personally, I always wanted to see whole movie of Future War, because I feel like we were promised that. We were promised a Terminator 4 where the whole movie would be Future War. So, you know, I'm going to go into this. I'm assuming this is the end of the franchise. Am I going to be satisfied at the end that there is an ending to it? Or is it just leaving us hanging?
It does not leave us hanging in one sense. Like, there's, like, one little ADR line about, like, John Connor saying that, you know, oh, well, yes, this base has been destroyed, but there's more out there. We won this battle, but not the war's not over yet. That's kind of it, though. I mean, it's like, but it ends on a note that basically says, you know, if there's no more after this, then this is kind of, this is, it's okay if it ends on this note. And it's appropriate because this is the note it's going to end on. And the one more thing I will say about this movie that has not been given away that we haven't gotten to is the ending, which is very stupid. And is harped on throughout the entire movie, and I guess I can go into spoilers if you don't care, but basically John Connor gets mortally wounded at the end in the factory by a Terminator when saving Marcus Wright, and basically Marcus says, you know what, they say, oh, he needs a heart. He needs a heart transplant. It's the only thing that can save him, and Marcus Wright says, you know what, he can have my heart. Because the whole movie they keep saying, oh, he's, oh, the, oh, look, the only thing that's human of him that's left is his heart. Yuck, yuck, yuck. So stupid. So stupid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and so in like so John Connor's sitting there at the base, on home base, whatever, the Rebel Alliance base, whatever. All the characters we've seen in the last 2 hours are standing in front of him, and they're all looking sad. His wife is getting teary-eyed. Oh, it's the only thing that can save him is a heart transplant. And then all of a sudden, Marcus Wright says, I'll do it. The Resistance needs you. I'll give my heart. This is my second chance. We all deserve second chances. Because that's a line that's said in the beginning of the movie. So, look, everything comes around. Oh, my God, what good writing. I'm being sarcastic, obviously.
They should have gone with the original ending.
Oh, my God, that original ending was brilliant. It really was. I mean, the whole movie, and this has been said on a number of forums, including the Chud forum, and I think Devin said this, and he's right. Devin Faraciu is one of the head writers up there. The whole movie is leading towards this ending, and when you don't get it. And it would have been better if you had had this ending. And it you know what? It works even better with the rewrites because John Connor played an active role in the movie. So he's heroic. We see him as the brave leader he is. And yet he was still killed off. They still had to have his skin being put over Marcus Wright's body. But yeah, just that ending was so much better. But people.
Well, at least we get an ending. My fear was we were going to get an ending like the end of The Golden Compass, where the movie doesn't end, it just stops.
Yeah, that's true. No, it's not like that. It's nowhere near Golden Compass, because this movie isn't boring. It's entertaining, you know. At least we don't talk about, like, the dust, spice, the dust. I mean, that movie is the modern day equivalent of Dune, you know. It really is, you know. And I'm talking about Golden Compass, not Terminator.
Right.
For people
right.
wondering, you know, I'm sure I'll get three angry letters. Two and a half, maybe. But, you know.
If you folks want to know about what we think of the Golden Compass, we do have a little retrospective on Think McFly Think. If you just click on the Movie Moan tab and scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll see it down there, Golden Compass. Check it out.
For our very first show, no less.
Yeah. Wow.
Back in our day when we used to do it for nothing. Ha! We still do.
We still don't do it for nothing.
Exactly, for our benefit.
Still do it for nothing.
Exactly. You know. But anyway.
Well, I'm going to see this movie, dude, but I don't know. I mean, the way you're describing it, it sounds like it's more about medical procedures and, you know, conditions more than robots. You know, cancer, heart transplants. It just sounds not very exciting at all. But I'll give it a go. I've got nothing else to do.
That's true. Up won't be out for a while. Yeah. So anyway.
You bastard! That was cold. That was cold.
Hey, you've seen Star Trek. At least you're happy there. You've seen one.
But I can't keep seeing Star Trek till October.
True, but still. Anyway, so what else happened this week, folks?
Not a lot of other stuff entertainment wise. Although I was talking to Phil before the show about a couple of trailers that came out this week. One was for Gamer with Gerard Butler. This is directed by the two guys who directed Crank and Crank 2, and also the trailer for the science fiction movie Surrogates with Bruce Willis.
Yes.
Both of these projects, to me look, you know, I mean, Gamer could be terrible, but it could be, you know, pretty good action. And Surrogates apparently is based off of a graphic novel I had never heard of, actually, but the trailer looks also very good. And it seems to be a pretty good year for science fiction, what with that, and you have Moon, which I think is supposed to come out this summer.
Yes.
With Sam Rockwell.
Phil,
what do you...
Can't wait to see Moon.
Well, tell us, first of all, Ed, tell us what the concepts are for Gamer and for Surrogates.
Gamer is basically, it's like a remake of The Running Man, in the sense that you have this future society, and in it you have this show, I guess, I don't know what the show is called, but basically that the players are controlled by, it's like a real life EverQuest, in the sense that you're, like, in the trailer there's a kid who's standing in front of a giant screen controlling a real guy who's Gerard Butler, who's a death row inmate. The idea of being in kind of like The Running Man is that if you complete the task, and in Gamer it's 30 episodes, you're set free. Now, the person running all of this is Michael C. Hall, doing a really weird, almost James Carville-esque southern accent. And that's why, Jamie, I want you to take a look at this trailer, because I want to know what your opinion is on the depiction of southern accents in cinema.
I think I speak for all southerners when I say if it doesn't involve sodomizing Ned Beatty, it gets the thumbs up.
Oh, okay. Well, thankfully, Ned Beatty does not get raped in this movie. But
I'd hate to be that man in real life.
It's a very much a B action movie, but I mean, I like the look of it, and it's like I said, it's a remake of The Running Man, which is supposed to happen at some point, but there's been no word on that. As for Surrogates is basically a movie in which, in the future or the near future, everyone, it's kind of like The Sims, in that basically they have another version of themselves that goes out in the world and does their job. The people who are controlling the suits basically live in a chair in their apartment, and their surrogate or the cybernetic suit just goes out and does their job. And Bruce Willis plays this FBI agent. Now, the funny thing is, Bruce Willis' surrogate has this funny, really bad wig, which I think must have been intentional. It's this funny scene with this floppy blonde hair. And eventually some things go down where the surrogate dies and the person connected to it dies, and so that's the mystery, and they're trying to find more stuff about it. So Bruce Willis has to get out of the chair and go out into that world to try and solve the murder and what else is going down. So a little bit of iRobot, perhaps. But it's another very intriguing idea that certainly piqued my interest. Phil, what do you think?
Well, a Gamer, I think, sounds like the perfect concept for the teenager. Usually spend all their waking hours playing World of Warcraft in their bedroom's crowd. I mean, this sounds like the perfect move to tap into their synapses, if you will. But, you know, from their track record, Brian Neville, Dean and Mark Taylor usually make R-rated movies, so I'm guessing this will be an R-rated movie. I'm not sure if it's going to be PG-13, so they might not be able to steer. I think it looks a bit... I don't know, man. I was getting a real Death Race vibe from it. I mean, the remake of Death Race, which came out recently, and that, you know, you've got these, you know, hard and tough guys. Again, that was Jason Statham. This is Gerard Butler. Gerard Butler seems to be doing some weird accent, which all I can describe is neutral gruff. It's not Scottish.
I think that accent is called gritty. That's about it.
Yes. Yeah, but there's no accent there. It's just guttural sounds. It's very, very weird and neutral. But you know, it's a guy who's, you know, got a family and he's against the odds and he's gruff and tough, and there's this female character who's in a suit who seems to be pulling the strings. In Death Race it was Joan Allen, which was a big shock to find her in that movie. But and this movie,
hey, she was hungry, goddammit.
Yeah, I guess so. In this movie, I know the lady's name, but I can't pronounce it. It's Kyra.
I think her name is Kyra Sedgwick. She's Kevin Bacon's wife.
Oh, I forget that Phil doesn't know what the closer is. I forgot. Yes.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean that to sound like a dick for once, but no, I mean, I just forget, because like, us Americans know her for the TV show The Closer now, and everyone else knows her as Kevin Bacon's wife. So, I mean, you know. Bit of a distinction there.
It's kind of... I actually do know it. The thing I know her from is a Batman movie, an animated movie.
Really?
Called Mystery of the Batwoman. She played the Batwoman.
She was?
She was the voice of the Batwoman.
Yeah. She was
that's
the Batwoman? Oh, my God.
She was.
That's kind of like... That's the worst sense of, like, I wonder who the Batwoman is. Probably that woman with the southern accent, probably. Batman, I have to... Really? Like...
You got any sweet tea over there?
Yeah.
But but I will say, going back to Gamer, you have Michael C. Hall, who's amazing in Dexter and 6 Feet Under. The guy's not a movie actor. I don't think he's really been in any movies. This may have been his first or second.
He's playing the Scoutmaster in this trailer. That's what he's playing. He's playing the Scoutmaster.
There have been some rumbling.
Go
oh, that's true because there's a weird shot in the trailer where he's like, it's obviously a cut. He's supposed to be walking with his goons to the left and his right, but see, the way he looks and the way the shot is cut, it looks like he's about to break out in the dance and song. It's a very funny shot. You got to see the trailer, which is you can see it on YouTube or Apple. But, you know, hopefully it'll be a hard, you know, I imagine it would be a hard R. You know, it sounds like it could be utter crap, but, you know, I like the concept of it and the look so far, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's opening in early September. That's not a good sign.
No.
Because that's usually a dead zone for films.
Yes, it is.
And, but, you know, I will wait for further reviews. And Ludacris is in it, too.
Oh, thank God, you know. But, I mean, I don't know. I heard Michael C. Hall wasn't even in the movie that much. It was actually kind of a minor role. They're beefing up in the trailer, supposedly. That's what I had read.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's surprising.
So, I mean, like, all those Dexter fans and 300 fans, like, hoping that there could be, like, the long-awaited amalgam of that popular series and movie can, you know, finally.
It's funny just with Gerard Butler. It's just that the guy has this weird schism where he's both in – because they try to make him out into this big action star,
right,
which hasn't really taken off. But then he's also in rom-coms, and he's going to be in a rom-com this summer. So it's a very odd schism for the guy. I can't quite understand.
Well, at least that rom-com is going to do well. I mean that was, you know, that's called the Ugly Truth, and that was supposed to come out this past March, and the movie was tracking and testing so well that Sony said, "Fuck it, we're going to put it out in the middle of July, prime summer season. Make this to one of our big tentpoles for the summer." That's a real sign of confidence there. And, you know, I mean, Paramount did something very similar to Trek, where they moved it away from a very safe December release, where it wouldn't have faced anything, and they said, "Fuck it, we're going to put it out during May because we're that confident in this movie." So I don't know, maybe it'll do well. Gerard Butler needs to do something where he's not – he needs to have a hit movie where he's not shirtless because, I mean, frankly, everyone made him out to be the next big thing after 300 exploded, and yet his choices of films are bad. And to be fair, they were bad before he did 300. It was one of those, like, luck of the draw kind of things. Like, he just happened to choose a really commercial project, or maybe his agent did. I don't know. But he so far has not lived up to his hype whatsoever. And you see some of these actors who were hyped up – and they don't – you know, Worthington's the next one. We're hearing that he's supposed to be the next big thing, and yet Terminator Salvation is underperforming. And his name is second only to Bale. It's above the fucking credits. And you wonder, like, well, maybe Worthington isn't going to be the next big thing. But right now, I mean, Butler hasn't been. So, I mean, who is the big thing we've got right now in terms of fresh talent? It sounds like it's only Chris Pine. And that's ironic considering that's the only movie he has coming out. Is Star Trek. That's it. He doesn't have anything else now.
It's true. I think, I mean, you've got to feel sorry for Gerard, but you've got to imagine that the guy, after 300 came out, he must have got so many scripts that were just the same role. They were just written for him to be a gruff, shouty Scottish person.
Right.
And obviously, you don't want to do that stuff. I mean, sometimes you are limited by the scripts that get delivered to your door, and I bet someone came knocking asking if he wanted to be Conan, or maybe they, I don't know if they asked if he wanted to be He-Man. I don't think anybody would have been that stupid, quite honestly, but who knows? Sometimes you can only do the roles you're given.
Oh, no, he wouldn't have been He-Man, he would have been Grayskull. Phil, it's called Grayskull, it's going to have some legitimacy now, you know, it's going to be dark and gritty, instead of being called Master of the Universe.
Oh, sure it is.
You know.
It's ridiculous.
I was just thinking that. Like, really, do we need to call it Grayskull to confuse people, trick them into thinking this isn't going to be...
It just sounds like Smallville. You know?
Yeah, that'll be on for...
Somebody save me!
Just we can actually keep it on the air for 20 years and never make him Superman.
Jeez. But yeah, but in regards to Surrogates, Phil, what did you think about that one?
Well, the first thing I noticed, I know you didn't notice this, but to me, it seemed like they actually say the word surrogate at least 10 times in that 2-minute trailer. You could make a very interesting drinking game, I think, when the movie comes out, of how many times they say the word surrogate. It just seems to be said
really
a hell of a lot. I also, to be honest, I found the trailer very, very... I didn't think it was very clear what the story was. I thought it was a very muddled, confusing trailer, and it didn't seem to be It didn't sell me on what kind of movie it was. I mean, is it an action movie? Is it an apocalyptic kind of movie? Is it a, which it seems to be at the very end, is it a conspiracy movie? Is it a mystery? Is it a murder thriller? What, I don't know what it is. So I can't really, you know, it just, but like I say, you know, I've learned my lesson from a long time ago not to judge a movie on a trailer, because sometimes when you have ambitious movies with an ambitious story, and it looks like it might have an ambitious story, it's very hard to sell it in a trailer. So I'll wait and see what the word is, and if the word's good, I'll go and see it. But I'm not impressed with the trailer, I must say.
Fair enough. But yeah, that's basically been it movie-wise. I can't say much else. I know obviously the big thing this week will be Up. Next week will be The Hangover. And
Land of the Lost. Doesn't Land of the Lost come at the same
time? Oh, yeah, Land of the Lost, which I got nothing on. So.
I don't either. I think that might do decently. It's funny because the next 3 weeks we've got like family comedy, family films that are going to be going competing against one another. And those are the kind of films that have, you know, that's all about repeat business and legs and word of mouth more than anything else. Not like these films like Terminator Salvation, which is they're all front-loaded like hell. But I don't know. I think Up's going to do rather well. I think at the very least it'll match Wally's box office. Wally did around $230 million. I think this will do around that. It might do higher because there's always the rule with Pixar films, the unofficial rule that if one film was popular, the next film will probably open higher based on the popularity of the previous movie. And we've had now two insanely successful and popular Pixar films, Ratatouille and Wally. So, and Up's getting reviews – you know,
yeah.
It's getting equally glowing reviews like those last two films did. So I'm.
Is it 100% right now on Rotten Tomatoes? Well, that'll, does anyone know?
I don't know, but if it is, it will go down. I mean, I do remember thinking like when Star Trek was getting all those like amazing reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, I was like, yeah, and like in 2 weeks, like Up will blow it away. So, you know, yeah.
But isn't it true that this has been happening year after year after year now since Ratatouille, that this will probably be the highest rated film critic-wise of the
probably.
Year, again, for the third year in a row.
And you're right, it is rated at 100%. However, that said, Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell is also rated at 100% at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be
interesting. That's a good point. Yeah, that's also coming out this in June, and that'll be good, you know, see Raimi going back from finally stepping out of Spider-Man. Going back to horror.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, this is PG-13 horror, and supposedly it's great.
Apparently it's great, and it comes out next weekend, so it's going after an audience that did not really flock to see Terminator and who are still going to see Star Trek. So it's – I know I keep bringing up Star Trek, but it's true. I mean, that's the flick that's clicked with people of our demographic so far this year. So – you know, they need to go after that. I think they'll probably hit it, quite frankly. I mean, I think this movie, I think Drag Me to Hell will probably do around the, if it hits around 50 to 60, it's going to be considered a success because that's the most realistic number it can hit. I mean, there's no way it's going to win the weekend against Up. That's just not happening.
It could be possible they could have, you know, as they say in the business, I think anyway, that it has legs. It could be around. I mean, like I said, it'll be nice to see Raimi doing something different. That's, you know, and hopefully, you know, I hope all the questions about Evil Dead 4 are put, you know, finally to rest. There's especially no reason to do that after it's been about 16 years since the last movie. And
it would be a parody. It would, I mean, if you did Evil Dead 4, it would have to be.
And my name is Bruce was terrible.
It looked terrible. So. You know, a movie is terrible when the trailer, and I mean this with all due respect because I like the guy, but when Ted Raimi's name is flashed as a big star in your movie in the trailer, you know something's up.
Yeah.
No offense.
And speaking of Raimi, I know there was some more. There's really been nothing going on with Spider-Man 4, but now for some reason the latest bit was that he's supposed to have Morbius and or vampires.
But he keeps saying that he hasn't even read the script.
I don't think I do not think he's going to direct Spider-Man 4. I've gone on record saying this. I will continue to say this. I think he's not going to do it. I think he's going to walk. His attitude, his vibe in interviews has been just. Evidence. Look at it's always the shit. All you gotta do is look at everything that's been presented in front of you, and all you have to do is look at it and go. Sam Raimi's probably not gonna do this movie because I don't know. There is nothing to support. He doesn't seem to give a shit about Spider-Man 4. He keeps saying like, yeah, I haven't gotten the script yet. Yeah, the guy who's what's his name, Christopher. He's the guy who wrote Inkheart. I forgot what his name is. He's a fresh screenwriter. I think he won a Pulitzer Prize. He got hired back in the end of October, early November, to write the script. And like a month ago, Sam Raimi says, we still haven't gotten the script yet, and we don't know who the villain's going to be. but that guy is still writing it. Okay, it doesn't take that long to write a first draft, particularly when you're in a rush job to get this movie in development like they are with Spider-Man 4. So something's going on with this movie. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make one bit of sense. Now I say, well, right. I'll get the script in June, but we still don't know who the villain's going to be. And he previously said, yeah, Kristen Dunst is coming back, and now he's said on like four or five occasions now, well, we don't know if she's coming back, but I'm going to talk to her tomorrow. And then he keeps saying the same answer over and over again. I'm just saying, something's not clicking with this movie. I don't think he's...
No, I that is not a good sign. I will say, if they're going to have Morbius, they damn well better have the hand suckers that were in the cartoon. That's all I'm saying.
I would love to see that, actually. I'm glad, yeah.
That would be some crazy shit.
And
Raimi would, they
have
the
hand. And the best thing is Raimi would want to do it practically. He wanted to be practical effects on the set. That'd be better than any CGI you could imagine, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Phil, do you know what we're talking about here? Or?
I did not see those episodes,
really?
Unfortunately. I didn't.
And they won't even call it blood. They'll call it plasma, like they did on the cartoon.
Yeah.
And they won't shoot guns. All cops, and apparently in this universe,
laser.
They
guns.
All, even the regular policemen, you know, shoot laser guns. So I was waiting for the episode of Law and Order in that universe where, like, the fucking, you know, Jerry Orbit pulls out like a laser gun and shit. But I didn't.
Not to go full off the rails, but I always wondered about the laser guns. Was that if you got shot by a laser gun? Because that would happen in cartoons. Is that like getting shot by a real gun, or is it just getting like stung?
I never could figure that out. Just like sting a little bit, kind of like.
Yeah,
that's what it
seems to be. You get some burn marks, and that's
yeah.
It.
And then,
but
well,
it's not like
Ed, I don't know if you've Ed, I don't know if you've ever seen Moonraker, but they had laser guns in that, and it seemed to hit.
Yeah, no, it seemed to kill. I know what you're talking about, but I don't know. There's no, they're always hard and fast about the laser gun,
yeah.
Which is why you always subscribe to the Batman animated universe, animated series universe. Where everyone's got real guns. So
that's why one of many reasons why that cartoon was so great. You know, just that little thing is like, oh look, they use real guns. They're not going to digitally put walkie-talkies on them in 20 years, you know.
Right. I mean,
well,
the same thing
they
with laser
Tommy
guns.
Guns, so lasers wouldn't be appropriate.
Well, I mean, maybe they'll have a potato gun instead, you know, I don't know.
That would just be as deadly, though, actually, a potato gun.
That would be awesome, actually.
Oh.
The bat potato gun.
it shoots a potato shaped like the bat.
Oh, that's funny.
Hell's Chances, just for a second, I think it is going to do well, because I'll tell you what's going to happen, guys. People your age, our age, slightly older, they're going to go in the afternoon to their theatre with the chance of and hope of seeing Up, and all of a sudden it's going to dawn on them, shit, children, what are we going to do? Oh, we should go and see a late night show. Oh, that's true. Okay, well, what are we going to do for 2 hours? How are we going to kill the time? We'll see Drag Me to Hell, and that's what they'll do.
I slightly disagree with you. What's going to happen is that this guy is going to want to get laid that night with his girlfriend, and so, as always, you take your girlfriend to see a horror movie.
Mm.
What?
But she'll want to see the Pixar movie.
You think? Has anyone in the world ever gotten laid after taking their wife and/or girlfriend to see a Pixar movie?
I'm sure plenty of people doing Wall-E.
I'm sure.
You think people got laid? Like, all of a sudden the wife got horny after watching Wall-E? Damn.
Hey, you said it.
I'm just curious.
It's one of the most romantic movies I've ever seen.
I don't know. I mean, I was moved by it, but I didn't want to go like fuck anything that walked the moment I walked out of the theater. Needless to say.
Oh yeah, I heard a couple say, "Let's rent Hello Dolly and fuck."
Yeah, baby. That's right. Get that Judy Garland out there.
That is all. That anyway,
Fred Willard,
before
I tell
you. He was so good in that film.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But anyway,
actually, there is one final thing before we move on to Memo to the Executives.
Yes.
It's we did not talk about the major trailer of this week, Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, I forgot about
it. Oh, that's right.
Yes. Man, that thing is going to make some money. It really is. That thing is going to make a lot of money, mostly domestic, mostly international, but good God, that thing's going to be a big hit.
No, that trailer was great. I did enjoy the bit involving the hammer.
Yes, me too. I was just thinking that. That's such a great trailer moment, you know. I strike that. The best trailer moment is at the very end.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Which, that actually got the biggest reaction out of my audience for Terminator Salvation was that line, because the trailer was right in front of it, was attached to it. That one little moment. More than the entire movie, that trailer got reaction out of people.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna be a bit cynical here, because I'm not convinced. I think you're right, I think the movie's gonna be a big hit. But I think if you took Robert Downey Jr. out of the equation, and the, you know, he's essentially doing in this movie, I think, and this is just a first impression, I could be wrong, but he is essentially doing in this movie what Johnny Depp did in Pirates.
I don't feel that.
He's saying, I'm going to put on this funny accent, unique accent, which people find funny, and it is funny.
I thought Downey's accent was a lot better and more realistic than Depp's. Depp was not even...
Oh, I agree.
Depp's wasn't even...
I'm just saying.
Depp's wasn't even accent. Depp was doing gibberish. That's all he did for three goddamn movies. You know, at least Downey doesn't sound like Downey with that accent. That's how impressed I was, I must say. Maybe that.
Well, Downey could do a great British accent because he was Chaplin.
That's right. So. Now we know why Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce, heavens. Guy Ritchie hired him, you know.
I'm not saying it's a bad accent. I'm just saying that it seems to be just, you know, if he says things in a British accent in this way, it'll be funny. And it doesn't matter what he says, because it'll be funny. I'm just not convinced. That's all. Could be wrong. I'm still going to see it. Still interested to see it, because I think it's a very exciting take on Sherlock Holmes. And it's a big risk, and I want to see if it pays off. I'm just saying I'm not convinced that the movie is going to be stronger than him, if that makes any sense.
Perhaps. But I will say I want to know about two things about that are going to be depicted in the movie. One, are they ever going to address Sherlock Holmes' cocaine use? Second, will they make any jokes or references to the hat? That's what I want
to
know.
I'm going to say yes to the hat, no to the coke.
Damn.
That's a guess, because this is going to be a PG movie. It's opening Christmas Day. Although currently it's going to be Christmas Day, but I'd go ahead and bet money they end up moving it up a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I know that this past Christmas it worked really well putting all these big movies on Christmas Day and all those. Actually, with the exception of The Spirit, there were five big releases on Christmas Day 2008. Four out of the five were big hits. Only The Spirit bombed. So maybe they will keep it on the Christmas Day. But I wouldn't be surprised if they
did.
I guarantee you.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Let me just say that. What do you think it's going to be PG? I thought this would be an R-rated film.
you're joking, right? No, of course.
I had no idea. It's supposed to be PG.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be PG-13, sir.
No kidding. All right. Well, there you go. I had no idea. So there you go.
No cocaine. There's not going to be that scene where he walks around fighting a villain with like coke still smeared on his nose.
That'd be a return of the Downey Jr. from 10 years ago.
Exactly. I don't think we need to be giving that man any more demons. He's enjoying his life way too much right now to go back to that.
Yeah.
It's true. I think I'm not sure they won't touch on it, period. I mean, this is clearly – this is supposed to be the start of a series.
Yes.
So it might be like Iron Man and the Booze. You know, they'll save it for a sequel, even though we're not getting that in Iron Man 2.
I'm about to say, we're not even getting that in Iron Man 2, so.
That's true. But I tell you – got in the hat, I bet you anything this movie's going to end just like Star Trek. He's going to come out of a door and he's going to have the hat and the pipe and the classic accent, and he's going to say, Watson, buckle up! And they're off on another crazy adventure. That's how it's going to end!
But the difference is he's already established. I mean, I've read script reviews and they've said, like, the movie, him and Watson have been a team for like 10 years at the beginning of the main plot of the movie. So they've been doing this for a while.
Oh. Well,
yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I just, now maybe he'll find the hat or something. Maybe it'll be like, you know, the Friday the 13th reboot where, like, he, you know, finds the hat in an attic and just puts it on out of nowhere. I don't know.
Maybe it'll be like Wolverine. Some old folks will give him that hat
and then we'll,
in a little hut.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. So.
That's fucking retarded. Is it time for memo to the executives?
Sure.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is our regular feature of the show, and it's proving to be quite successful, actually. I'm really enjoying doing this, and you guys seem to be enjoying it as well, where we talk about a franchise as it stands now and basically hypothesize and dreamweave about the kind of things we want to see happen next, where we want to see it go, and not what we think is going to happen. This is pure, unadulterated fantasy, a product of wild imagination. So, this week, we're tackling X-Men. We've had the X-Men trilogy, which has kind of fizzled out. We didn't get the Dark Phoenix saga that we were promised. We don't know if there's going to be an X-Men 4. We don't know if Fox is going to carry on. We don't know if there's going to be a Magneto spin-off. We don't know if there's going to be a Wolverine sequel. It's all up in the air right now. So the question we ask is, what do we want to see happen now? I defer first to Ed. As you told me before, you saw the first two X-Men movies. You didn't see 3 or Wolverine. But first of all, would you like to see X-Men 4 and then sort of pick up the pieces of the broken crockery and just carry on and just give us a great new story? Or would you like to see them just wipe the slate clean and reboot it?
I'm of the mind that you don't necessarily need to reboot it. I think we don't want to get too crazy about that because that's being done all the time. I think that you're definitely going to want to recast. I want someone else for Storm, even if if they're actually going to use her. I think that's fully agreed upon. Mm-hmm. As for new stories, I'm down for perhaps doing something original, or if they want to plumb the depths, I'm sure there are plenty of other great stories. I know there are other, aspects of the X-Men universe they can easily touch and go after. I know because I was just watching the Volume 1 of the animated X-Men, which is an alright show. There's the whole Friends of Humanity thing. I don't know, maybe, that would, wreak too much of domestic terrorism, but I think there could be a good story with that. Perhaps the idea of the secondary mutations is brought by Grant Morrison, or even the idea that, well, actually they'd be too much like Children of Men, that humanity's cycling itself out. There's definitely room around to do stuff. I don't necessarily think, if they're going to introduce new characters, that you want to focus on it, and plus pick characters you're going to have some good stuff to work with. As much as we think Gambit is cool and all, there really isn't all that much to work with. And Jamie is a fellow Louisianan. I imagine you're probably not all that crazy about the character to begin with.
No. I didn't like the character just because we already have a roguish good guy with a mysterious past. His name is Wolverine. We already got that. He's, right. We don't need two.
I think what it was with Gamma is that we all got fixated on the magenta body armor is what we got, and then because he also had a long coat.
Yeah, that too. Nothing says roguish like that. Long coat.
Yes, and I think because I don't want to see Marrow or any of the other god-awful 90s characters out there. I'm basically saying that. Don't start again fresh. If you're going to do the X-Men new class, get new characters in there. What I don't want to see is the trend of you're having basically prequels on prequels, and then the shoehorning of trying to get it in there. I think there are good stories. I mean, maybe you could even do a Sentinels thing, although I'm a little wondering if you could do that live action, because it'd be like Transformers. So I don't know if you could do it that, but if you're going to go into the branch off, like I said, the new class, do new characters. I don't know if you want to be like Generation X. I mean, hell, why not reboot that? It was a terrible miniseries, TV movie on Fox.
Oh, yeah.
But yep. With Matt Frewer.
I was about to say Matt Frewer, yeah. Living off those Max Headroom residuals.
Yes. Because, I mean, there's definitely good stuff in, around that they could explore, but maybe they need to pare down the team. Could they do Dark Phoenix? I'm sure they could. I think something could be cool found out of that. But what you basically learn out of X-Men 3 is that A, you don't rush, and there's no point jamming it up to the hilt with every freaking character.
Well, the X-Men movies were rushed. I mean, that's what I always say in Ratner's defense. I go, well, that movie, all three X-Men movies were all rushed. The difference is that they knew what the story was going to be. With the first two, they had a script. Granted, they were doing constant onset rewrites, but the bulk of the story, they knew what was going down. So, I don't blame Ratner for that. And also, Ratner was brought in, 2 weeks before filming started, where all the decisions had already been made, and they needed someone to say, all right, let's point the camera there. All right, action. Right. I mean, I don't blame him for that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's understandable. But like I said, you don't want to you got to keep the story pared down. You don't want to make it – so many characters, there's no room to breathe. You basically would run into Spider-Man 3 syndrome all over again. I think that's what I basically see here. And, I think for me, I mean, if I had to pick a project, I'd like to see a Friends of Humanity storyline.
What about you, Jamie? X-Men 4 or reboot?
I would say, this is what my personal opinion about what they should do next, I would rather them do. It's going to be the cop-out answer, but I really feel this way. Because after Wolverine, but I think we need to take it out back like Old Yeller, and shoot it. I really do. I cannot believe that if you had told me after X-Men 3, like, dude, in 5 years you're going to fucking hate this franchise. This will be a walking joke. Everyone will hate it. I'd be like, you're fucking nuts, dude. And shows what I know. I have no interest in any more X-Men movies. I don't want to see prequels explaining everyone's origins about how that they had that little booger hanging out in their nose at the beginning of the third film. I don't want to...
Oh, you mean Duke?
Exactly. I don't want to know how that happened. We don't need an entire prequel just around that. I'm not interested. I don't care. The one interesting thing that could have been done was the Magneto movie, because when they first announced that along with the Wolverine movie, I thought, that's more interesting. I'd be interested to see that movie, and I'd be interested to see Brian do it, Brian Singer. But Brian already did that movie, and that movie was in the opening 10 minutes of X-Men 1. We don't need any more than what we got. That opening 10 minutes said everything that needed to be said about Magneto. That's kind of it, really. I mean, you know, part of me would like to see Bryan Singer come back, but then again, that's never going to happen. And he's better for – I think Singer is better for having left X-Men. Better having left considering how great 2 was, because there's no way he could have topped it. So that's how I feel about it. I know it's a cop-out, but God damn it, I'm going to stick to that answer.
It's not a cop-out at all. I do think on a wide perspective of an audience, I think people are much less excited about the prospect of a Spider-Man 4 than they are of an X-Men 4. I still think there's passion and excitement for this franchise because it's, you know, it's much easier to pick up the broken pieces on X-Men than it is on Spider-Man right now. Because of the fact of who the X-Men are, you don't have to have, you know, all of the characters, and you don't have to pick up all of the pieces. So obviously, you know, in the last movie, they took Rogue's powers away. She got cured.
Yeah.
So if she isn't in this movie, doesn't matter. You can assume she's just gone off.
Yeah.
You don't have to have so many of the characters. You can pick and choose which ones you want and just put them in and just start all over again. Having said that, and I'm going to say a lot of things now which I think you guys are really going to moan about. I don't think you're going to like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to stick by it after giving this a lot of thought. I think, yeah, I do want to see it rebooted.
Ugh.
And not only that, well, give me a chance, please.
Reboot? Let's reboot a franchise. Ooh. Let's reboot a franchise. The last movie came out 3 years ago.
Someone boo this man.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not saying when they should reboot.
I know.
I think it needs time to go away. But here's what I think. I think there are two wildly different interpretations of X-Men, which have both been very, very successful, and we've only been given one of them on the big screen. One that we've been given is the one that is grounded in reality, you know, where it's all given a sort of, you know, scientific explanation behind the mutations, and, you know, people don't, you know, it's mutant terrorists are terrorists like us, the human terrorists. It's grounded in a reality, you know, and it's all about the prejudice and all of that stuff. There is another side of X-Men, which has always been in the comics, and that is this wildly fantastical, much more outlandish science fiction vision where you have, you know, giant robots and you have the Phoenix and you have Magneto living on an asteroid which can launch nuclear missiles.
Wait a minute. Are you advocating for them to bring an Onslaught? How dare you?
He wants Apocalypse, what it is. He wants a mutant with a big fucking A on his belt, just in case you know.
Or Mr. Sinister with a lot of fringe in the back.
Yes, I want Mr.
He's got Sinister. Boots on his boots, for fuck's sake.
In the Age of Apocalypse, with like an alternate reality. And since Star Trek did so well, we can get away with alternate realities now.
Anyway, go on.
No, I wasn't quite saying that.
I know.
I think Hulk Hogan as Apocalypse would be very, very interesting. I think that's sellable.
That's fun.
Eat your fibers. Yep, I'm going for that. And
that's fun.
Yep. And no, here's what I think. I just think that I'm thinking about this as a businessman as well as a fanboy. Mm-hmm. I think if you brought the Chris Claremont vision of X-Men literally onto the screen. I mean, you think that they can't do those costumes in live action. I not sure that they can't. I think an extremely talented, brilliant costume designer could make find a way to make those costumes that the X-Men wear, those colorful costumes, work. Maybe not 100%, but here's what I know. I don't want to see him in black fucking leather again. Because that is boring, it's dull, and everybody does it when they can't think of another way to put... G.I. Joe have friggin' done it, and they're just guys who wear colourful military uniforms. There's nothing outlandish at all about G.I. Joe, and yet they put them in black leather, and it's the first time I knew that.
Not outlandish?
I think the only way you would get away with doing the yellow spandex is if Joel Schumacher made X-Men.
Yeah, exactly.
You're saying yellow spandex, but I'm not talking about yellow spandex. I mean, they're not all in yellow spandex.
Some of them are just in yellow, like, underwear or, with blue spandex. I'm sorry,
this is
Phil.
In blue Speedos.
With
exactly.
Their mutant powers that they can wear Speedos well. That's their mutant power.
I know you don't believe me, that's great. That's the debate. I'm just saying that I believe that it's possible. It's hard, but I believe an extremely talented costume designer could actually bring a colourful X-Men onto the screen. But here's the most important thing. As far as the actual ensemble, the team of the X-Men, they were not portrayed. I mean, they nailed the characters to a large degree in the X-Men trilogy, and it was great to, you know, they were a family of characters, and we liked seeing them for the most part, you know, Halle Berry excluded. But in this movie, I mean, in a reboot, there would be a lot of room for improvement. For example, the problem with the X-Men trilogy, as everyone has said, was they became Wolverine, the movie, or at least the first two did. They got a great guy to play Wolverine, and unfortunately, they bigged up his part. Cyclops didn't get anything to do. Hugh Jackman became a star, and, you know, he got more and more to do, and Cyclops got less and less in every movie. Even in a reboot, no, that changes. I think we need to get the handsome man be Cyclops. Cyclops needs to have a great part, and Cyclops needs to be the leader of the team, as he's always been, and be the great dynamic character that is adored by the fans. And you need to get the equivalent of Jackie Earle Haley as Rorschach to play Wolverine. You need to get ugly, short dude to literally play the mean and dirty Wolverine that people know from the comics.
Wow.
You know I'm right.
No, Earle Haley is not for Wolverine. Earle Haley is an odd-looking guy, but, I mean, if you're going to, you might as well just put Earle Haley as Puck. You're going to play it that way.
I'm not saying he should
play... Let's get down to brass tacks, Phil. You're asking for Alpha Flight, the movie. Is that what you're asking? What North Star of the
Beast? You go too far.
Yeah, we never...
All right, I'll bring it down to Excalibur. You want that.
Ooh. That's
no,
X-Factor.
No,
we get like Multiple Man there and like Strong Guy. Hey, look.
Strong Guy.
I wonder what his mutant power is.
That's another thing. You can't call a movie X-Factor because people think it's about a talent competition on the television.
No,
so you can't call
it.
Yes, they will.
No, only people in Britain will, sir. American audiences will say, hey, it's got X on the title. That must mean it's an X-Men movie, you know?
Right. There was actually it's funny. There was actually because X-Factor was the Peter Milligan comic, but there was also a short four-book miniseries years ago. It was on the law enforcement side. It was actually a pretty interesting story, but, I mean, that would just be like a side thing. I doubt you can make a full movie about basically like two, you know, FBI agents, you know, in on the mutant universe. That's something for a TV show.
I'd be game.
And that's like X-Files.
I would be totally game for that, because, I mean, Marvel, once they've conquered the film world, the next logical step for Marvel will in fact be television, and you know they're going to go that way.
And that's been touched on every so often. They did it with there was that X-Factor miniseries. There was District X. It's basically taking the Powers comic that Brian Michael Bendis and just basically having it focus on the cops, which, you could do stuff with that. And, you know, I always find that stuff intriguing. There have been attempts to do
that. I've always said that if there's any comic book I want to see made into a movie, it would be Kurt Busiek's Astro City. That could be an amazing movie.
Right.
That'll never happen for legal reasons, but still.
Right. But, well, heck, I always wanted an animated miniseries of Long Halloween. That's not going to happen either.
So. No, but, yeah, I could see there being some Long Halloween influence in Batman 3 whenever the hell that comes out in 2027.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, there's always been Long Halloween influence. I got to hand it to Nolan on that, that there's been that undercurrent. You know, it's there. So.
It actually is. It actually is in both of his Batman films. That's a good point, actually.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Actually, it's interesting you say that because I was going to say to you guys, I really think we should do the third Batman 3 for next week's Memo to the Executives and what we want to see in that movie. But for now,
that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Just so I can finish my thought on the X-Men here, I just think that if you have something that really gives the fans, you know, what they were promised in this series. You know, when X-Men 1 came out, you know, people understood you didn't have very much money. You had to set up all the characters. You know, we can live with the fact that you didn't give us the Danger Room and you didn't give us Magneto going huge, crazy stuff that we know he's capable of because he's such a powerful mutant. And we didn't get Phoenix and we didn't get other stuff. What else was I going to say? Other slots and other stuff. It wasn't as big as it could have been. And you don't have lots of superpower people fighting. Now, but the evidence is there that the box office results of the trilogy and of the opening weekend of Wolverine, people know X-Men makes money, especially if the word is good. If they make a reboot of X-Men and people and the reviews say it's great, then people will come. So they can spend the money on it. They can justify spending the money to make a huge X-Men movie with the perfect lineup of characters, which is Cyclops, Wolverine, Beast, Storm, Rogue, and Jean, all with the characters properly in place. Cyclops is the leader. Wolverine isn't. And also, it's funny you mentioned the animated series, because I'm a big fan of the animated series. I haven't seen the last couple of seasons, but I remember I saw the first two because they were when they were shown on television. And in the pilot episode of that, they did something really smart to introduce all the characters. Instead of talking about their origins and something, or having a character show up at the mansion and meeting them all there, it starts in a shopping mall, and a sentinel attacks it, and we meet all the characters
that,
in
that
there.
That was great, actually.
And they all do their own little things. And it was great. It was a great way to introduce them. You can do that this way. If they're going to start it again, you know, they shouldn't start it by introducing all the characters in a boring, slow way. Just start it with a action sequence and have them all appear in their own unique ways. And people already know who these guys are. You can take it as read. You've got an entire trilogy worth of exposition already there. People know who the X-Men are. So you can just start with a bang. In the Chris Claremont stories, Magneto was a terrorist. He made no bones about it. The guy hijacked submarines and hijacked nuclear weapons and threatened to chuck them at the world powers if they didn't fucking get into line with what he wanted. The guy was unbelievably powerful. And so I think for this first reboot X-Men movie, you have X-Men and you have Magneto, X-Men versus Magneto, but on a huge scale that they never achieved in the previous movies due to money or due to whatever. And I think people would go to that in droves.
I think they already covered Chris Claremont run with Bryan Singer's movies. I mean, there is so, if you're a combo fan, there is so much of the Claremont books in those two movies of Bryan's. I mean, Claremont, the best strength of the first movie, which I think is a good film, is the them and us scenario that they set up between humans and mutants. That's all in the Chris Claremont books. And Bryan set that up, Singer set that up rather brilliantly in the first movie. And the second movie is so full on. I remember thinking that while I was watching X2 on the opening night, like, goddamn, this is a Chris Claremont story on the silver screen. I cannot believe I've lived to see the day where there's a Chris Claremont fucking X-Men movie in front of me. I can't believe that. So I think we already got that, man. The fact that we got two of them is...
Yeah, especially in the second.
Yeah, the fact that we got two of them is good enough for me. I don't think we need any more, frankly. I think if you're going to do another X-Men movie, you might as well go full on like that old mid-90s... That mid-80s pilot for an unmade show, Pride of the X-Men. Let's just go all out and do Pride of the X-Men the movie. Let's just give it a stupid theme song and make Wolverine Australian.
Wolverine with an Australian accent.
Boy, was that weird.
Boy, right! Barbie.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I mean, we should just go all out and do that if that's the case. You know, give Colossus the
moves the
give Colossus the worst Russian accent. And, you know, like, yeah. Nightcrawler was played by a German, so he sounded like a Nazi. I thought he was going to say, "I'd Hitler!" any time there, instead of, like...
Well, he says, "My God," all the damn time in the Claremont comics, so...
So, I mean, same thing, you know, because Hitler is their god.
That's actually an interesting...
Why would you...
I was going to talk about casting.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, we have a different opinion on this, but I mean, who do you guys want to see?
Jamie wants to leave it alone. I'm a believer in the power of unknowns, because it's just from an economic, from a studio standpoint, it makes more sense. You can get them to commit to three movies. It makes them stars. By the time the franchise peters out, guess what? You know, you don't have to worry about negotiation deals and shit. So I'm always a big believer in that. I mean, so far in the last couple of years where they've been casting unknowns in these big movies, I personally think they've been very successful. Whether it be Jackman as Wolverine, Ralph as Superman, who else I thought was successful? Pinus Kirk, who was another unknown who kind of Bale was not an unknown. People knew Bale. Who else would fit in that category?
Well, I would definitely put like Heath Ledger as the Joker. I mean, no one would have thought about that. It's very much you're casting people who are not. That you never really thought of them that way to put them in there, you know.
The Potter kids. Thank you. No, the Potter kids also. Thank you, Bill. That's what I was thinking. The unknowns. Yeah, thank you. Because those kids. That's another example where, like, when those films are done, you will never see half those kids ever again. Because some of them will not do any more movies. Mm-hmm. I think some of them will, but like those kids seem smart enough to be like, you know what? I think I'm gonna like get a degree and get a real career now. You know.
But I think if kids read the books right now, they picture those actors their heads when they're thinking about the story. Mm-hmm. They're icons now.
Yeah, in the same way that like in the 60s, people were reading those Ian Fleming Bond books, and they just couldn't help but think of Connery. Same exact way, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, look, I just think, I mean, you bring up a good point about the fact that they have represented Claremont really well on the screen, and I agree with you, they have. I just think there's a lot further to go with it in terms of really upping the epicness and the bigness of some of those X-Men comics. I don't think we've seen that. I'm also thinking about the fact that we've seen a hell of a lot of superhero movies now, and it's getting increasingly harder to bring something new to the table.
Yeah.
That's why I'm excited about Thor and about Captain America, because they can be just that little bit extra different, hopefully. And, you know, I don't know where we're going to be on the Avengers movie, but we haven't seen yet a huge scale team move.
No, we have.
And I just think that X-Men could do that. But we'll
we
see.
Almost
I
got
mean,
it.
That's just how
I mean, we almost got it with the, with the cinematic abortion known as Justice League Mortal. We almost got it. You know, we could have gotten that.
We also would have had Batman versus Superman at one point. So.
Yes, which would have been okay, because the word on the street on that one is that Warner Brothers loved that script. Like, they loved it so much that they're kind of hoping that they could eventually use it. Maybe with, like, Bale and Ralph one day. It's like, I could see that. That's what I heard.
Akiva Goldsman's filthy paws all over
it. You hate that man.
I don't want it made.
You hate that man, don't you, sir?
No, I don't hate him. Look,
Phil's gonna egg his house.
For people, I don't.
You know, Goldsman has like.
I don't think he can.
Goldman has like caller ID, and his wife's just like, "Honey, it's that Phil guy again. He's calling. Hey. Don't pick up.
It's not Akiva Goldsmith, for Christ's sake. I mean, geez, you know that's just terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole nother thing. I mean, I don't want to.
Yeah.
You don't want to get sidetracked with my hate,
even though I don't hate
him.
Oh, okay.
So,
no. I forgot.
No, I don't.
There's a couple people pissed me off. Don't worry. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
It's well documented. If you listen to past episodes, there's a couple of people who kind of boil my blood a little bit. So I won't go into who.
Mark Millar,
only because like it's the same thing as McGee. It's like, you know, you just don't – you lie your ass off all the time, and people are still giving you press, and I won't anymore. Fuck you. You know. He's annoying. What can I say?
Well, I think
– I don't know. Anyway.
I think we've that was a good one, actually. That was a good memo to the executives because we disagreed with each other.
Right.
We got in a big fight, and that was great.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
yelling.
But I swear, guys,
hair-pulling. Like a typical internet forum fight. So.
Yep.
That's passion, though. And I learned something new about Jamie. I I had no idea he felt this badly about X-Men right now. I mean, I had no idea you felt that deflated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think I speak for most people when I say that. Most people don't care about this franchise anymore. I mean, look at Wolverine. It petered out in the second weekend. Nobody cares now, you know.
I disagree with that. I think if there's an announcement tomorrow, yes, they're making X-Men 4, no other details right now, people are going to pay attention. People are going to be interested to see
That doesn't mean they're interested. That means they're just paying attention. Like, it's kind of like talking about Ghostbusters 3. Like, people are paying attention, but that doesn't really mean they're interested. Ghostbusters 3 is one of those flicks that's like, you know, when we hear someone other than Dan Aykroyd say something that we haven't heard before, then I'll pay attention. I mean, they're going to make Ghostbusters 3. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But still, I don't give a shit right now about that franchise, about that film. I'm going to wait to hear Joel Kinnaman.
But again,
go ahead.
Again, I disagree, Jamie. I think, use the Spider-Man comparison. They've said they're making Spider-Man 4, but I don't see people
what
storylines
they
should use. Really, nobody cares. With X-Men 4, if they announce they're going to make X-Men 4, I think people are going to say, well, I hope they use this storyline. I hope they use these characters. I hope they don't do this. I think people are going to be interested. People still care about X-Men.
You know,
you know
what they'll say? They'll say, I hope it doesn't suck like the last one did. Yeah, that's what they'll say.
Well, sure, that too.
Yeah, but that's it, though. I mean, that doesn't mean they care. It's like, whatever. I might show up. Apparently, it's just like Terminator 4. People are like, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, well.
So anyway.
Well, that was great.
Yeah, it was fun.
And so next week we'll do Batman 3.
Yeah, let's see. Let's cook up some ideas.
All right.
I know what I don't want with Batman 3.
There you go.
I already know what I don't want for Batman 3.
Well,
I think everyone will agree with me. They don't want to see it. They're sick of this. But anyway, that's next week.
Would it have something to do with Philip Seymour Hoffman?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
I like Philip Seymour Hoffman. No, unless he's playing Cat.
I know, it's just that's the rumor that we're sick of hearing.
But we've heard that rumor as far back as, like, late 2005. So the fact that surfaced, like, after Dark Knight came out was silly and stupid and showed up people weren't paying attention. That's why I tip my hat to Bill Raimi, a.k.a. Jed, over at Batman on Film News. Because it's like, he was the one to come out and said, guys, this rumor's old. Like, why are you following it? It's bullshit. And it's like, exactly. Thank you. That's why I listen to him for Batman News. Because he kind of, you know, he kind of knows people who make the fucking Batman movies, you know. Anyway, that's just me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
I would suppose.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Folks, thanks for listening. Gentlemen, wrap it up, sir. Sirs.
Oh, add you first, please.
I don't even know what to say. I just know it was another damn fine edition of this podcast here, and as always, I look forward to the next one, and we'll hopefully try and keep, you know, Jamie, hopefully you keep them coming.
We'll do, as always.
All right.
Phil?
I guess I could have ended on a Simpsons quote or something.
I got nothing.
Is that true? Let's get him! That's all I've got. I'm sorry. I'll try, but I'll have one prepared next week.
Been
Phil, you can work on this. We'll go out for steamed hams. It'll be all right.
For Utica.
You call them steamed hams, despite the fact that they are obviously grilled.
It's an Albany expression.
Yes. Seymour, the house is on fire!
unbelievable.
Oh, good night, folks.
Anyway.